someone had last time.
Fortunately, no water.
Oh, sure.
I've already done my spilling for the day.
Take a minute to come up.
There you go.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sandra Nadelton, and I want to thank you for being here. I know there's lots of distractions in San Diego right now to take you away, but I appreciate your willingness and your concern about minority populations and the promotion of health in these groups. Is everyone here a nurse? Yeah. How about in education? How many people are in education? All right. Another. How many people are in maternal child sort of things? Only a few of us. Okay. And adult health, then I take the rest? Community health kind of processes? All right. Good. Want to get an idea of why you're here so I can kind of focus my discussion on that. I do talk about several different websites. It was kind of implied to us as presenters that all of our PowerPoints would be available to you guys, and there was nothing about a charge, so I apologize for not that. And we're also told, don't bring handouts. It's a green world. Let's keep it out. What I did do, though, to help promote the information out is I made a wiki for this presentation. So my PowerPoint and all the references that I will make will be on that, and it's open to the public, and I'll give it to you at the very end. So just one website will get you into all of these. Plus, if anyone who the other presenters want to send me your PowerPoint, I'd be happy to put those up too, so you can have those websites too, because I know how valuable they are. And sometimes they're like gold. You find them, you're like, oh, this is so wonderful. So if you want to send it to me, I'll send you, and I have business cards if other people want to put anything on there. Or you can just go to the PB Wiki website, and I'll show it to you at the end. And you can put comments, so if there's wonderful books or resources that I didn't mention or anyone else didn't mention, this will be up as long as people want to use it. It'll be up, so feel free to not panic about writing things down.
This one?
Yeah, okay. All right. I do not have anything to disclose except my appreciation to you for showing up to Portland or Boise State University for helping finance this trip of mine and for the American Public Health Association for allowing me to talk with you today. I want to talk about a few definitions before we get started. First of all, I guess another question. How many of you are thinking about doing research using large-scale database? Okay, I got one. Even if you aren't, I think there's some value here, and I appreciate those who just aren't comfortable about leaving in the middle, because there is an amazing amount of information out there that is helpful for you as an instructor, as you as a nurse, because a lot of times you say, hey, I've got a problem, I know there's a problem here, but unless you back it up with data, most people aren't going to listen to you. But when you go to your legislators, when you go to your community organizations looking for money, if you can say, we have this many people in this group, this is their population problem, and we need to do something about it, you're going to get people listening to you. So in terms of large-scale database, what I'm talking about is big information that's already out there. And some of it is incredibly valuable, and many times it's actually free. Although it's usually secondary data. Most of the time it's collected possibly for another purpose or another reason, but it can be used for you. You might have heard the term data mining. That means finding out big information and looking for stuff. Some people use it in a derogatory way, but I just wanted to mention that. Using secondary data, there's some pros and there's some cons. Some of the pros is that you can identify and explore amazing amount of problems and information. Oftentimes the information is free. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to have surveys. You don't have to have data collection. It's just a matter of downloading it, and you've got this stuff to use. And oftentimes there are huge samples, thousands of people. The more people you have in research, the more likely you are to find some statistical significance. Sometimes, though, it's hard to find what you want to find, or what you find might not be exactly what you need. You have to kind of think, well, how am I going to use this? You have no idea many times of the accuracy of the information. You hope that if the CDC collected it, they did a good job. But a lot of times it's reported information. People don't report exactly what you might want. For example, talking about a particular ethnicity issues. Most of the time, most of the surveys that are put out have, you know, Caucasian. It might have Hispanic. They might not be exclusive. So some people are like, for example, my husband's part American Indian. His son is part American Indian from him, but also from his first wife. Well, so his son is about a 16th American Indian, but now when he goes to fill out a survey, what does he put? Well, he's more Caucasian, you know. So sometimes the data, you're not exactly sure. Where does the person fit? And people don't know, even who might be part of two different groups, where to put themselves. So sometimes they might get categorized into information or a place that they may not specifically fit. And sometimes data is missing. So when you're trying to find some data, first of all, there's a variety of things to do in terms of you've got some sort of questions. And you're going to start asking, well, what does the literature say? What can I find about this? Find some research questions. I recommend starting that first and get yourself looking at a specific topic. Refine your variables and find the data source. Sometimes you find the data first and start asking questions later, depending on what you're thinking about. And there are a variety of databases, and I'll go over those later, that are helpful. Sometimes you're not exactly sure where to find that. So what you can do, if you find a research article that looks really interesting to you, most of the time now the journals have the person's email address down below. Send them an email. Say, hey, I saw your research. It looked really good. Where'd you get that data? Oftentimes the person will say where it's from, but not always. But I've gotten people questioning me, where'd you get that data from? And I'm happy to share that with you. So feel free to ask people. Also, talk to research institutions. Is there a big hospital or medical center in your area? They might have information that you need. And also public health agencies. If you're planning on publishing your research, you need to go through an IRB process, the Institutional Review Board. You need to fill out all the paperwork because many journals now will not accept even secondary data research that has not gone through the IRB process. The good thing is it's usually pretty quick. With using secondary data, it's often considered to be an exempt process. So you just fill the paperwork out and they go exempt. Okay, you're fine. Go for it. Once you have that approval from then, you start taking a look at the data, see if there's missing data and things that you can kind of clean out. Sometimes I had big data sets and, say, looking at income, and there might be a variety of people that it's missing that income level. Sometimes you have to kind of make some decisions on what to do with that data. I usually look if there's particular numbers that are out of range. For example, I've done some research looking at minority groups in graduation rates at universities. And, you know, I'll look at the data and it's like a pile of universities, their, you know, graduation rates 30-40%, not unusual. And all of a sudden there will be a 0 or a 99. That's wrong. So I need to fix those numbers. And you too. I always write notes as you're doing database research because once you go back and go, what did I do here? How did I get this? It's important. I use SPSS, but some use an informational statistical program called SES. Both work well. You do need a little instruction on how to do it. They're not completely self-explanatory. Once you get to the data looks good, then you want to go through the analysis process, review the literature, draw some conclusions, and of course disseminate results. Questions so far? Nope. Am I keeping people? I mean, kind of know what I'm doing? Okay. Different types of data analysis you might want to look at, things like correlations, which means if one goes up, the other goes up. For example, what we would expect is that as our height goes up, our weight goes up, those kind of things. One doesn't necessarily cause the other, but they do go together. Another type of evaluation is multiple regression. How do things influence? For example, does a maternal age, birth order, and place of birth make a difference in, for example, African-American premature babies? ANOVA, is there a difference between groups? And this is very important when looking at a variety of different minority and ethnic groups. Is there a difference between obesity levels in African-Americans, Latino-Americans, and Native Americans and when you're looking at the elderly population? So this would tell you, are those groups of people different? And then there's another thing called a path analysis, which looks at a variety of different influences on outcomes. I recommend either do what I did, marry a statistician, or find one. If you're going to be new at doing this kind of research, many people are willing to give you some aid in telling you which direction to go. There's a lot of excellent books out, too, that can help you, but it's good to have someone holding your hand the first couple times through. So how can the data be used? Here's some examples. You can identify how much does the state of Idaho, spend on health education per county and percentage of minority citizens within those counties. And you can do, where do you think you might go for this? Where could you find data on this? Yeah, the census data. Census is wonderful. They're really good about, you know, who's where, and you can download that easily. I highly recommend, and I was talking to them today, and was mentioned earlier, the Office on Minority Health. If you can get downstairs real fast afterwards, booth 1125 has CDs that have a lot of information on it. They actually are giving away today, free of charge to anyone, books on like the African American yearbook, and they also have Hispanic and another on Asian. These are excellent resources for you. Plus, they have a lot of data online. They can help you. And if you are not sure, you know, where you want to go with, you know, you need some data or whatever, you can call them up. Go to their website, which is omhrc.gov, and I can give you the 800 number at 1-800-444-6472. And you can ask them, I want to find out how many Latinos live in Miami County, or Dade County. And they will tell you, they will find that information for you. CDC is not that helpful. They'll say, look on your website. But the Office of Minority Health will actually find where you can get that, or at least give you some real strong direction on where. So I'll use them. So the question there would be, does spending differ by number of minority citizens within the state? For example, Canyon County is a state county in Idaho that has a lot of Hispanic people, while I live in Ada County, which doesn't have as many. Do we spend different amounts? That might be very helpful to say. You know, we have this large population, but we're not spending money there. And the public health organizations can give you information on where the spending happens. Another example, research on the percentage of hepatitis C among ethnically diverse citizens within an inner city of Los Angeles neighborhood. And then we can take a look. Does minority status influence the percentage of people infected? I think there's already research done on that, and yeah, particularly in LA. Within San Diego County, identify areas of high lead levels in the soil. And there, you know, EPA can give you information like that. And then you can look, do more Latino children have autism in that area than non-Hispanic children within that area? So you're looking then at correlating lead and Latino groups and, well, or non-Hispanic white groups. Decide what you want to do first and what kind of analysis, and that's very helpful. And the literature also can support you in your findings. So, you know, usually what I do is I find a research article that looks really good and starts me thinking, hey, you know, that's great, but what else can I go, where can I go from there on that? I always recommend, too, thinking about publications. I highly recommend before you even start writing an article up that you look at what journal are you going to put this in. There are specific recommendations for every journal. Like I just submitted something to the Journal of Hispanic Higher Ed this last week, and I didn't read the small print that I had to have two references from their journal to be considered. And many journals are going that way. So I got a little notice back. We'll take your paper, but you need to stick another reference from our journal in there. I'm like, okay, I have a lot. So I popped it in, and now it's good. So if you can avoid those kind of things up front, and I always also like to find out what order is the information put, what kind of language do they use. Most journals now are going to first person versus the third person. I know if you're like me in nursing school, you never said, I did this. Or we did this. It was like the researchers evaluated the statistics. That's gone. APA 5th edition says first person, active voice. Yeah, it's a little bit of a change, and it doesn't feel quite right the first couple of times, but you'll get used to it. So think about that as you get ready to publish. A lot of people think, okay, we're nurses, we should put things in nursing books. Nursing journals, but in reality, if you go into some of the larger ones, you're more likely to get that information read. So think about that too. If you're not sure on where to publish, think about going to CINAHL. This is their website. Once again, it'll be on the PB Wiki. There's also about 546 nursing journals listed within CINAHL. In terms of public health, they only have 60. So you got a lot more choices with nursing, although they're not completely nursing. Some final suggestions as you go is to find a mentor. Is there someone within your organization who, particularly people in public health are pretty good at the big data numbers that you could work with? They might be, for example, a second name on your publication, but you'll be on it. So think about that. Keep notes, like I mentioned, because you'll do things and then forget what you did. And be willing to adjust your data as you go. So some resources for you. Like I mentioned, the census data is very helpful. There's some quick reference for census. The APHA does have a health disparity database website, but it's old. They're not putting anything new on it, but it's worth looking at. North Carolina, actually has some great website, has a great website with many, many links. That's what that is. Kaiser Permanente has a lot of research and a lot of statistics, and they look at many minority issues. Once again, the National Database Warehouse of CDC is very helpful. The Children's Bureau of State Stats looks at things like adoption, foster abuse, and they have many different types of ethnic data in there. U.S. Department of Health, that was mentioned again, but that's part of the Indian Health Services. They provide great information in terms of statistics and information about groups of American Indians. CDC Research Data Center, you can get into their data, but you have to apply, and you'll find there are many organizations you have to apply. Some of them, I have one, I think it's NICHDS, it's a national longitudinal study of development of children, but it cost me like $300 to get the data. And they gave me the CD, it's amazing, it's like 12 years of data from these kids, and they followed them from birth, so it's amazing stuff. But it cost me a little bit of money, and also had to prove that I had IRB research approval beforehand. National Center of Health Stats, good. List of state health departments, this is really good if you want to like find out how much is being spent on, let's say, information on STDs within a county, to have an idea, you know, are we spending as much in the counties with high minorities as we're spending in the low minorities? Well, maybe that's a reason why there's more STDs in those high minority counties. This is where you can get all this information. Just http://databaseresearch.pbwiki.com. And I wish this is not live to the internet, so I can't get to that. But if you just put that up in where the URL is, go right there. You don't need to sign up and get an account or anything like that. And you can go in. There's a home page on the left that has, you know, welcome, this is the research. And then on the right, there's some folders, and in those folders where this whole PowerPoint presentation is. And then I also have information on international minority and, international data. I have information on the, you know, U.S. data that I've mentioned. And then some articles and things like that on looking at things like, I haven't really mentioned, but looking at some of the geological things like where is the lead, where are high levels of uranium, that's all available. So if you're looking, you know, you're really interested in lymphoma, is there high lymphoma correlations with uranium in your area, lead, all kinds of nasty things out there. I know there's not many of you that are into child health, but there's also a great thing, Data Resource Center. They have adolescent and child information, so those who maybe are a little bit older, STDs. I'm going to pass these out.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions or comments for any of the speakers? Yes.
Program, community was, the theory department was done. they're allowed to be freed up to work at these community-based sites instead of doing home care. So it's really a true partnership with the other faculty. People say, well, how do you do this? Especially with the accelerated students who finish the program in half a semester. And they actually produce product in half a semester, they're like doing double time. So it's built into the community course, and the theory and the theory faculty and the clinical faculty work together, and they use the students to do this. And clinical faculty come, they get awards also, and they're part, they go out to see the students present. You know, so it's really truly a team thing.
Mm-hmm. It's 3 days that they do the public health piece, and the rest of the time they're in health care agencies. So they're going to be down there.
Our students think they're extremely overworked. They can't possibly do that.
Well, you know what? There comes a point when some students feel overwhelmed a little bit, and like they tell me that. What part of I also let them have some of my class time, break down in groups and do some planning. So when I hear them say, Dr. Stern, we haven't gotten our, and the other thing I do is the big project, I don't wait till the end for them to turn it in. Let them give me 3 pieces. First, giving a description of your community first. Then I give them feedback and say, hey, you have holes here. You need to redo some things or add in. And they fix that piece up. So there's two or three times they made it, and at the end, they've done most of the work for the project. You know what I mean? So it's not like all of a sudden, oh, it's just one time we were letting hand it in at the end, and it's like they were freaking out. Because remember, we want nice papers, because we're giving them away. And they reflect Seton Hall, they reflect, so I have to make sure they're well written. But students find it fun. And here's the thing, when Marianne and I decided when we wrote this grant, used to be, everybody has to take community help. It used to be that you had to assess any community, so most kids would assess their own town. They'd write the side of the paper, and it'd sit on my shelf and on their shelf. We got to thinking, why don't we create something that makes a difference in the world and give it to people to use? So that, and students say, I'm really making a big difference. And they feel like it's worth the extra effort to do this. And some of them say the skills they learned help them with their, if they choose hospital nursing, their QA committees that they're on, that are typing in the computer and you know how you collect information. So they learn a lot of skills. And many of them are really turned on for working in the community afterwards. Okay. Not maybe the first job, but the second or third, they call me back in the year after.
One of the areas that they have the biggest problems with is statistics. So I usually try to do that in a class setting, in groups of students, and just put it on the board. Okay. This group is doing, you know, you've got multiple groups looking at each community. Okay, so we'll do all the community data for Irvington all together. Here's this piece of the board. But because each of the students have been able to find pieces, so they work together, put it all together, all goes on the board all at once, so that in one day we finish up the data piece. And make sure that they're correctly calculating.
There's a lot of good teamwork. You know how like you have to work with others, but everybody's doing their own papers usually. What happens is sometimes you may say, oh, I don't think this is all wait. And you know, we don't sit there and you know, we say, okay, they tell us, you know, you have to say, you need to go back. So you learn skills of that. How do you work with people who aren't carrying their load for their work, you know? Not everybody does that, people break it up. And I let them break up the work the way they want to, usually. But sometimes there are dynamics that are issues, some are level of learning.
Okay, good. Thank you. Let's take a couple more questions or comments. Okay, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Have a nice afternoon and a nice lunch now.
Thanks, Sandy.
I like what you're doing. That's really neat.
I teach actually health promotion course to doctoral students. Mm-hmm. And the first part, they have to do an evaluation of a health promotion program. But they have to document it with statistics. So this would be great.
Yeah.
It would be great for the first part of it.
So.
Great.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm
leaving
today.
What
would you not let that you like? then they feel they're
the whole town of Birmingham and the subpopulation. And
trouble. I mean, tutors are the best when we get to court.
They, you know, the internet.
And I give them guidelines for what I want them to do. So I want them to tell me how many males and females in the community. I want them to tell me the major public health, the major health issues that are affecting that particular town. I teach them a little bit about resources like CDC.gov and census data. whatever. I give them a few, the health statistics, New Jersey health statistics. So they have to use the internet to figure out. I don't give them the number. They got to.
So that's
the community assessment thing. Everybody gets the same topics, but they got to have different communities. So some people are looking up North, some people are looking up Perryville, some people are looking up East Orange. Some people may be looking at Roselle, the town of Glidden. We didn't present on that piece, but we kind of use all these other towns that we've now got from.
So they can community enforcement on the town.
And then they talk to their mentor about getting the information about subpopulations, about why there's a need and problems. And they may also get on the computer and say, oh my God, gang behavior in this town is out of control. And that's what they want to do, gang behavior, that kind of thing. So they can find statistics also on the problem, but the mentor is the one who knows the community, and they say it's a problem. They pretty much. The other thing they also do is they have to do three interviews. They have to interview a nurse, a healthcare provider, somebody outside the community,
so this is actually
fun. And Mary and I have a passion for this. So some of the
I did. I got all your things.
And all the different kinds of projects.
But I'm going to, I wanted to contact with you a little bit more about the logistics.
That's what I just did with her. I explained to her how
we've been texting you. We've been using
Smith and Allen. And they just have a new edition that came out.
I just
don't you want
to know what?
I use Stanislaw. I've taught at many different universities. And I can be happy with Stanley Lancaster, I can be happy with Smith & Maurer, I can be happy with, I haven't ever used that one actually, so I can't really.
It's
theory-based.
Mm-hmm. It's
so abstract.
Well, I want to say Maurer because it's so simplistic.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, they don't all pick it up right away. But I usually tell them in class, and I said, now remember, you're learning how to do this while you're in clinical, and you're trying to do it. So you're going to seem a little confused at times. So, and then you're learning a new vocabulary in community, too, like population-based versus. So in class, that's when I work with them. I take about maybe a few minutes in the class, and I say, okay, everybody, break down in your groups, and I'm going to come around and ask questions. And then when one person asks a question, I say, hey, everybody, listen up. I said, are you having, and then I use that question to help explain it, because if they're confused, and probably there's other groups there that are confused. And so it's really many levels of, but they produce products at the end that are so. Sometimes you have problems with the English language. You get a few that can't write very well, and then we have to work with them. Because we have some international students whose English is not
well. We have students at the WIC program, and they do, they're working with, cross-culturally. We didn't stress that. And then we have some in Brazil. They did a project with urinary tract infections.
Women are having anal sex and vaginal sex at the same time and cleaning up between them.
And they is that an interesting project?
And so they were trying, but that's what the agency partner said. She's a nurse practitioner running the clinics, and she's saying, I'm having all these vaginal, and you know what? I teach them, and I give them the medicine, and they're clean, and they come back with it again. I'm figuring out what the hell's going on. She starts talking to them, and they're having all kinds of sex.
And you're from New Jersey?
Yeah. I'm from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. Because I just knew it was an Eastern accent, and so I'm music to my ears.
But it's so nice to have the Phillies won.
It's really
beautiful. Yeah, the Phillies won. And Penn State, well, see, I like Penn State because I went there, but Penn State's doing, with the
Penn State beat.
Oh,
my.
Ohio
State. But that's okay, my kids both went to Ohio.
Yeah, the Phillies, about time, right?
That's different
communities. Yeah, well, maybe we can make it a learning experience for, like, if it takes the same
And then they can learn about, hey, well, look, in Arizona, with this, the homeless population has these issues versus we can maybe do something together. The only thing would be have to look at the logistics of when the semester begins and semester ends. But if you're still doing it with your group, you can still, we can maybe just do
something. I've got to fix my program, but wouldn't that be
well,
cool?
Just do some kind
and
of
do a wiki or something like that.
Yeah, and the students can do the Arizona thing, and they're actually getting another population. Let's think through it, but let's
We got lots of vulnerable populations.
And vice versa. Yeah, and vice versa. Then you can maybe work with the group, and then your people will learn a little bit about New Jersey people and some of the issues. And then we'll figure out.
You're in Tucson. Right by the border, so we have lots of border issues.
With Mexican.
The largest Hispanic population. Our group is not diverse at all, I'd say. I am just disappointed that we even have, I think, a very tiny amount of Latino students. My students there was a time that working class people, and I'm working class, that went into nursing. I had met this one group of particular. They were terrified. They were terrified. They were so uncomfortable. It wasn't until the intervention at the end, when they got sourced with the community, that they got to really appreciate how wonderful. And I used to do public health nursing in this one particular project. And I love this project. And right now I've got students at another project in town that I used to visit as a public health nurse. And I just love these I just love public health nurses. Most interesting people, and they're all together, and they have nothing else to do, so they don't work. This group of students, I have what? Go ahead.
But they don't get the problems. Like,
our flu season.
Yeah, when was your ET? You're doing well. So when was your flu season?
It starts in December.
So you're later.
So you're telling me about the public housing group. They are great. You know what's the different way about them? 5 out of 9 are older. They're 30s and 40s, and that's just the older students that get it. They're
the ones that are willing to go into the community as the first job rather than the. That's second degree students, because they've already, seen the nursing.
They're put in a brown bag, but most of the time they teach a class or something pretty minimal. But this group is doing a brown bag event, medication safety of everybody. This week they were bringing the bags and putting on everybody's doorknob, and everybody dumps their medication in a bag. And they call the pharmacist, and got a pharmacist that come over, and they're going to just go through meds, and we're talking about safe disposal of meds, and we're going to have the kitty litter in the coffee grounds, and there's people. Their medication, but that's beyond what the students usually do. This group has put a bang up job.
She has the passion and fun that we have.
Yeah.
The same kind of thing. So
I
think of you.
Yeah, but I need to make my personal fun. I'm doing this because I like to do it. I don't have to work. I've got to make it my fun. And I think what you guys are doing.
We make
fun.
But don't tell me that. At the end,
they award. They have an award at the end. I love that idea.
The
recognition ceremony. Brings it to the attention of the entire faculty when the students are getting what
they stand
powerful.
Up and they're so cute when they stand up and talk about what they
what
stand
is
up
so powerful when you get a whole room full and they've got all their posters and you look around and in one fell swoop the dean and every faculty member gets to see this
what's
is what's so
we do a variation on that that's awesome. We do 5 PowerPoint presentations which are just to see but your idea I've had that idea before.
Bring the agency.
Let me tell you about this is where the PowerPoint comes in. The clinical faculty are making the visits to see them do their thing with their group. I hear about it when they all stand up, but I hear about it too in class. I don't, because I'm doing some other teaching.